The United States of America has a Judeo-Christian foundation. That's obviously not true of other nations, such as Afghanistan. And recently we have seen the implosion of the plan to try and make Afghanistan into a Western-style democracy. We're going to talk about that, but also the difference between the Founding Fathers versus other worldviews on this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Robert Spencer, who is a New York Times bestselling author on subjects related to Muhammad and Islam, including the Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades. Robert, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Always good to talk to you, Jerry.
Sure. Well, it's quite a tragedy what has unfolded in Afghanistan recently, but I imagine you would probably be one of those who would have said, you know, I'm sorry to say this, but it was never going to work in the first place.
Oh, that's certainly true. I've been saying that for years. As a matter of fact, somebody asked me not long ago, how long do you think the Afghan national government will last after the Americans leave? And I said, maybe 5 minutes. And as it turned out, that was pretty much on the mark. The Taliban has broad support within Afghanistan. This is widely denied by a lot of people nowadays, but it's clear because the Taliban adheres to Sharia, Islamic law, and Sharia is desired as the government and the ordering of society for Afghanistan by the overwhelming majority of people in Afghanistan. And so even if they might not like the Taliban in particular, they like Sharia, Taliban's bringing Sharia, the complaints will be few.
Can you explain what Sharia law is, and is Sharia law compatible with the kind of foundational government that we have in the United States?
Sharia is Islamic law, and it covers every aspect of human behavior. There is nothing you can imagine doing as a human being that there is not a law for in Sharia, or many laws in many cases. And so Sharia not only covers ritual aspects of Islam, which most people in the West assume that's all it covers, but it also covers everything else, including political life and the way that the society ought to be ordered. And so it denies the freedom of speech. It denies the equality of rights of women with men. It denies the full equality of rights of non-Muslims in a society. And consequently, it is not compatible with Western constitutional law. And it will institutionalize discrimination against women and non-Muslims as it is implemented in Afghanistan, as it has done elsewhere.
You know, it's interesting, Robert. A few years ago, when there was a congressman sworn in on the Quran, he liked to make a big point that this was Thomas Jefferson's Quran. And there was kind of an implication along the lines of, well, you know, Jefferson believed this, Jefferson believed that. And we do know that Jefferson's views were not as strictly orthodox in the Christian tradition the way many of the other founding fathers' views were. But what is your comment just on that itself, that Jefferson's Quran became a prop to try and say, well, you know, Muslims are great too, or Muslims are freedom loving too?
Yeah, this is a big part of the deceptions that are being spread around the country all the time nowadays. Jefferson is being used as kind of a poster boy for proto-multiculturalism. We even hear that he held the first iftar dinner, the dinner for the breaking of the Ramadan fast in the evening at the White House. None of this is true. Jefferson had a Quran, yes, because he was a man of great intellectual curiosity. He never showed any sign of being a believer in Islam or even of admiring Islam. And as a matter of fact, he and John Adams met with the Moroccan ambassador to, I believe it was England, might have been France, but in any case, they met with a Moroccan official to discuss the seizure of American shipping by the Barbary pirates. And the Moroccan official was quite forthright in saying, look, we do this to you because you're unbelievers, and we have to make war against unbelievers. It's in our holy book. Jefferson duly reported this back to the United States Congress. So he didn't have any illusions about Islam. He didn't admire it. He didn't think it was a religion of peace. All this is modern-day fiction. And as for the iftar, he did indeed have a dinner with another official, I believe another Moroccan official, who asked that the dinner be delayed in light of Ramadan, but it was not a Ramadan dinner, and to claim that it was is ahistorical and obviously based on a 21st century political agenda that was not remotely present in Jefferson's day.
Well, okay, here's the kind of common thought. Multiculturalism is the best word to summarize it in some ways. But the idea is, well, you know, one side of the coin is the Judeo-Christian tradition. Flip the coin. The other side is the Islamic tradition. Both are devoutly religious. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, Jerry, we know that if we read the New Testament, that there isn't anything about waging war against unbelievers, that the Lord Jesus says, if someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also, and love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. There's nothing like that in the Quran, and there's nothing in the New Testament comparable to the Quran's words, Muhammad is the apostle of Allah, those who follow him are ruthless to unbelievers and merciful to one another. It's a sharp difference, and a lot of people try to paper it over by pointing at Christian behavior. But, of course, we know that in Christianity, just as actually in all religious traditions, there are people who bear the name but do not actually act in accord with the teachings. And also there are people who point to the Old Testament without understanding the role of the Old Testament for Christians. And so really it's ultimately both Judaism and Christianity, for that matter, have rejected the literal understanding of those Old Testament passages that have to do with violence, and nobody has taken them as being marching orders for today, whereas the Quran's violent passages are taken as marching orders for today on a rather routine basis by jihad groups the world over.
Well, what do you think about George W. Bush, where his idea was, look, let's not be bigoted here. Muslims want to be free just like regular Americans want to be free. And so what are your thoughts on his nation-building crusade?
Well, you know, people do want to be free, but they might have a different idea of what that means. And when it comes to George W. Bush and Islam and the people of Iraq and Afghanistan, if you were to ask the average person in Iraq or Afghanistan, do you want to be free? They would say, yes, of course, yes. But if you were to ask them what that meant, they would not say anything like what we understand as freedom. Actually, most people would probably say something in line with living as Allah wishes one to do, which would mean living according to Islamic law, Sharia.
Okay. Are there Christians in Afghanistan? I mean, I've been reading reports where there are Christians there that want to get out, and it's a very difficult time for them.
Yes, there are Christians who want to get out. There are Christians in Afghanistan who are underground, who are not known as Christians, although if they have said anything to anyone, then unfortunately the Taliban probably knows who they are at this point, because they have been working to obtain the names of Christians and are going around searching for them. If they find you have a Bible downloaded on your phone, things like that, then you could be killed. The idea is that Islam mandates death for those who leave Islam, and pretty much all the Christians who are in Afghanistan today are people who have converted from Islam to Christianity. And that being forbidden by Islamic law, they are immediately given the death sentence.
So if you are apostate from Islam, then you could be killed. And by the way, I remember there was a Pew study where they were showing vast majorities of lay people. For example, even in Egypt, where you have a majority Muslim country, but there are a lot of Christians there, Coptic Christians, and yet a lot of the regular lay people among the Muslims believe, yeah, if somebody goes apostate, in other words, if they change from their religion of Islam to Christianity, then, yeah, they're worthy of the death penalty.
Yeah, well, see, this is based on a statement that's attributed to Muhammad, that whoever changes his religion, kill him. And so it's really quite clear that you don't leave Islam, and if you leave Islam, you should be killed. This is the standard teaching of all the schools of Islamic jurisprudence, Sunni and Shiite.
Religious freedom. Contrast that, if you would, between the founders of America and the practitioners of, you know, the political forces of strict Islam.
Well, you know, of course, the First Amendment says Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of a religion, whereas in Islamic law, it's understood that if there's that if you have a society, then you have to have the religion of Islam established within it. That is, the Islamic state constituted according to Islamic law is paramount. There is no idea of a secular state that is envisioned or even allowed for in any way in Islamic law. And so it's something that's completely incompatible with the idea of non-establishment of a religion. In Islamic law, Islam has hegemony, and the non-Muslims pay a special tax to the state simply for the privilege of being able to live as non-Muslims in an Islamic society.
What is the name of that tax?
Jizya, and that's based on chapter 9, verse 29 of the Quran, which says, fight against those who do not believe in Allah or the last day, and do not forbid what he has forbidden, even if they are of the people of the book, which is primarily Jews and Christians, until they pay the jizya, this tax, with willing submission and feel themselves subdued.
Well, then the multiculturalism that just predominates the conversation in the West is a bunch of malarkey.
Yes, that's quite right. It's based on fantasy, fiction, wishful thinking, all sorts of falsehoods. The fact is that, you know, the famous coexist bumper sticker.
Yes.
With the crescent of Islam forming the sea. And then there are some people who've parodied that by having the sea be like the little Pac-Man thing in the video game from the 80s and eating up the other ones, because that's actually how Islam coexists with other religions. They have to submit and accept its hegemony. The Quran says in chapter 8, verse 39, fight them until religion is all for Allah. And so if you have to keep fighting until religion is all for Allah, that doesn't allow for a whole lot of peaceful coexistence.
Islam is a religion of peace, we hear over and over. Your thoughts?
This is completely false, completely fictional. As a matter of fact, Jerry, just before we started this discussion today, I finished an article about Marjorie Taylor Greene, the congresswoman from Georgia, who recently said Islam is not a religion of peace, and now she's being criticized as being Islamophobic, when the reality is that all the schools of Islamic jurisprudence teach that Muslims must wage war against unbelievers in order to extend this hegemony of Islamic law that we've been discussing over them. Now, that's not peace. That's not a religion of peace. There's nothing comparable to that in Christianity. You can take any sect, any denomination, any church, and they don't teach you got to wage war against non-Christians and bring them into the rule of Christian law. There's just nothing like that in Christianity. And so to say that Islam is a religion of peace, it's one of the most successful public relations campaigns that has ever been perpetrated, but it's false and fictional. And to excoriate someone like Marjorie Taylor Greene simply for stating unwelcome truths is a sign of how divorced from reality our public discourse is today.
We have 1 minute left. Any thoughts on the 20th anniversary of 9/11? It's very sober now with this collapse of Afghanistan.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, the thoughts that I have are that we're losing and the global jihad is advancing. This is not something that most Americans are aware of. They think, well, they hit us on 9/11 and they haven't hit us since then and we're okay. But actually, the jihadis are still active within the United States and around the world. And with the fall of Afghanistan, they are more emboldened and aggressive than ever. And we are going to be hearing from them again in the near future.
Jihadwatch.org for more information. Robert Spencer, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Thank you.